Chair calls the Education Policy Committee to order for Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. So the committee legislative assistant will note the roll. We have a quorum present. Representative Mueller, you're always a good proofreader. Have you taken a look at the minutes yet?
The minutes are good. I'm checking with Co-Chair Jordan, who is the...
Minute lady.
She says they're good, so I say we approve the minutes.
Representative Mueller moves the minutes for Wednesday, March 4th, 2026. And let's see. I guess I'll tap the gavel. There we go. Make it official. So, members, today we're going to begin a presentation and discussion on the implementation of the READ Act. So the legislature has sought to hit reset on how we teach reading in our schools by aligning teacher preparation and instruction to the science of reading. The READ Act was first passed in 2023 and revised along the way and set out certain requirements and timelines. We will hear from the Minnesota Department of Education, the Professional Educator Licensing Standards Board, and local educators on the progress and challenges on implementing this new law. After our presentations, we'll have time for member discussion. This will be followed by a hearing of House File 3421 on early literacy field experience, and then our final item will be discussion on evidence-based math. These two presentations on the READ Act and evidence-based math are very important, so my apologies to the bill author and testifiers if we have to squeeze your time to fit our full agenda. So first, we're going to begin with the READ Act, and I'll welcome MDE to the table. They could come up. And as they're coming here, it's like I am like in dreamland here. I'm sorry, ladies, straight ahead of me. If you just present your name for the record and so on, you know the deal. I know you have several slides, so I'll ask you to be economical with your presentation so we can allow for member questions in the end. So go ahead, whoever would like to start.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education. Thank you for having us today. I'm very excited to share some updates on how well the READ Act implementation is going across the state. Of course, we start with our 10 commitments of equity, and we truly believe that the READ Act supports all these priorities. Just a reminder as to why we're all here for the READ Act, to have every child in Minnesota reading at or above grade level, beginning in kindergarten, as well as multilingual learners and students receiving special education services to ensure that they're supported in achieving their individualized reading goals to meet grade level benchmarks. I want to start with sharing about the work of our regional literacy network. Edit is the core of how this regional professional learning system works and the core of how we are supporting schools in their implementation efforts. And of course, we could not do this without our Minnesota service cooperatives in each of the regions as our partner. The Regional Literacy Network is composed of 9 literacy leads and 20 literacy coaches who are located across each of the 9 Minnesota service cooperatives. And the Regional Literacy Network provides support in these key areas: the planning, assisting with districts developing and implementing their local literacy plans. Of course, the ongoing implementation by providing monthly training and coaching to district and charter literacy leads, administrators, teachers, and staff. And the evaluation component, supporting districts and charters in tracking success of their local literacy plans. In the first full year of operation, which was July 24 to July 25, the Regional Literacy Network leads and coaches provided over almost 96,000 hours of professional development, coaching, consultation, and implementation support, with over 90% of the school districts and charters engaging this past year. Building the regional literacy networks allow us and to build a statewide capacity. The high degree of field support is a new approach for MDE, grounded in the Compass model. The regional literacy network became a lifeline to districts within the first year of operation. The support changed educators' mindsets from compliance to high-quality instruction and student outcomes. The Regional Literacy Network provides professional learning, coaching, and technical assistance equitably across the state. Coaching of districts to build capacity for sustainability in the years to come. This infrastructure has provided a space for district leaders to build their capacity to lead their district in these efforts. The networking and collaborating that is part of the delivery is supporting all areas of our state to provide consistent, high-quality, evidence-based instruction to all students. This is a slide of the REDAX theory of change and progress indicators. The REDAX has five key components that support literacy and are based on the science of reading, research, and structured literacy. I'm just going to highlight some of the data that we've included under the science of reading in the classroom. 98% of phase one educators are either trained or in the progress of being trained by the deadline of June 30th of 26. And 35% of phase two educators are trained or in progress. That deadline is June of 2027. So essentially, we have almost 90% of our teachers either trained or being trained in the matter of 2 years. Under student screening, we worked with both our assessment vendors. 78% of the districts in the state used FastBridge for their screeners. So the data I'm sharing right now is from those FastBridge districts. So 87% of used FastBridge and 99.9% of the districts and chargers are using those approved screeners. And under structured literacy curriculum, 70% of the districts are using curriculum aligned to the science of reading research base. Reading intervention, as you know, just this past November, the reading intervention menu was adopted, and we are currently working with districts to do training and build awareness of what those interventions are. So I don't have data this round for the reading intervention. And last, but certainly not least, is the local literacy plans. 99.9 of districts are submitting local literacy plans. And 99.9 of the districts have an identified literacy lead. And 44% of the districts are using the Minnesota MTSS framework. This gives a brief timeline of the legislatively mandated deadlines. We have made tremendous progress in these last 2 years, meeting all of our legislative goals and timelines. We have learned a lot along the way and have been able to adjust to meet the needs we hear from districts and our regional literacy network staff. The team meets with the RLN staff regularly and provides coaching and support to the district leads monthly. These next several slides will go into a little bit more detail and provide additional data on what the activities have been beginning in school year 23-24 to current 25-26. We'll start with the science of reading in the classroom. More educators are understanding the critical nature of evidence-based structured literacy instruction. Teachers are sharing that they feel more competent, have a greater ability to serve their students, and greater job satisfaction. Again, educators registered for training, you can see that data, phase one is 30,000, phase two is 2,200. And then the educators who have actually completed training, 64% of phase one and 26 of phase two. And then another important factor around the training is how well the paraprofessional training has gone. We have trained over 624 staff in districts to be trained the trainers for our paraprofessional training, and over 4,800 paras have already been trained. So this school year currently is focusing on providing paraprofessional and volunteer training. through the Regional Literacy Network, provide training to higher ed institutions. We have a new cohort that began in January that consists of instructors and professors from institutes of higher ed with about 35 people in that cohort. And then we're working on developing school leader training and getting phase two teachers registered. Under student screening, in the 24-25 school year, foundational skills screening data was collected. This is a monumental step supporting reading instruction in Minnesota. Statewide baseline screening data gives us clear starting point for understanding how well Minnesota students are developing their early reading skills they need to succeed. This information helps teachers quickly identify which students are on track and which students need extra support long before problems show up on later tests. Having consistent data from every district also helps the state make better decisions about training, resources, and supports for all students, no matter where they live, have the foundation they need to become strong readers. And our work this school year has focused on analyzing the K-3 student data to assess outcomes and to identify where improvements to implement grades 4 through 12 screening for students who are not meeting grade level benchmarks and to implement the oral language screener in early adopter schools. The next component is structured literacy curriculum, at least one curricula source aligned to the science of reading. 49% of districts are using highly aligned, 51% are using partially aligned. Our work this year is focusing on supporting districts to refine and supplement curriculum for students, support the new ELA standards implementation, and integrate curriculum and the ELA standards into the Compass Minnesota MTSS framework. And then we are also piloting a curriculum review process. And again, the reading intervention. Minnesota uses the Minnesota MTSS framework to help schools continuously improve instruction and provide targeted support on data. This list of interventions is a resource and not a mandate to help districts review their interventions and ensure they are effective and used as intended. MDE encourages districts to use the list as one part of a broader decision-making process to ensure students receive the most effective reading intervention possible. And then the local literacy plans. Like I said, 99% are submitting local literacy plans. 78% are working to adopt the MTSS framework, and almost all districts have a local literacy lead. So the local literacy plan serves as the district's roadmap for improving reading outcomes and ensuring every student receives high-quality evidence-based literacy instruction. The plan outlines how districts will provide instruction that is explicit, systematic, sequential, diagnostic, culturally responsive, and linguistically sustaining across all levels. This year, we are focusing on upgrading our technology for increased accessibility of the local literacy plans, as well as our efforts to analyze the plans and turn around and provide individualized support to that school district. Just a note on expectations of the READ Act and the impact on MCA scores. The READ Act focuses on the reading standard one of the English Language Arts Academic Standards, which covers foundational skills, which are phonemic awareness, phonics, morphology, accuracy, and fluency, that students must master before they can succeed on the higher level skills measured by the MCA. The MCA does not assess foundational skills because testing begins in third grade. So the READ Act requires universal screening 3 times per year to identify early strengths and gaps in these critical foundational areas. These screenings give teachers actionable, real-time information they cannot get from the MCA data, allowing them to provide targeted instruction and support. Together, READAC screening and MCA results offer a comprehensive picture of student reading development from foundational skills to advanced comprehension, strengthening Minnesota's ability to support literacy growth statewide. The transformation of the state's core literacy instruction is a multi-year, complex process. While we expect some improvements in MCA scores beginning in 2027, the full impact of the READAC provisions on MCAs most likely won't be seen until 2030. Screening assessment is a leading indicator for foundational reading skills, and this year, from the last June, local literacy plans gave us that baseline data set. A few observations from early adopters. Early adopters indicate that structured literacy is having a positive impact on student reading proficiency. Both instruction and curriculum have great impact, and the focus on multilingual learners is needed to achieve outcomes at a statewide scale. Structured literacy instruction is decreasing the number of students identified as demonstrating characteristics of dyslexia to normal ranges. Students who do not have strong foundational literacy skills often demonstrate characteristics of dyslexia in screening assessments, leading to over-identification of special ed. 17% is the national average for characteristics of dyslexia. I think what most is exciting about the READ Act is the landscape and attitudes are shifting. As educators finish the required training, the Literacy Unit and Regional Literacy Network are focused on helping schools put evidence-based reading practices into action in order to sustain them year to year. Ongoing professional learning is being developed for districts and charters to support implementation and sustainability. Coaching and technical support are provided through the network, tools to collect data on implementation of the 2020 ELA standards, structured literacy and cultural responsive practices are also in development. I know Pelsby will cover some of this during their presentation, but I wanted to highlight the successes and partnership we've had with Pelsby in our higher ed partners. 89% of these programs have demonstrated Pelsby's reading standards and passed the reading audit. There are 15 programs that have not yet passed the reading audit. Some of these programs are currently being reviewed or submitted and awaiting review. Educators who successfully complete one of these programs will receive a waiver to professional development, not be required to take the state training. Several higher ed programs have begun literacy lab practicums to give teacher prep candidates authentic experiences delivering evidence-based interventions to students who exhibit reading difficulties or characteristics of dyslexia. Just a few highlights on our ongoing work. We are in the process of hiring a multilingual literacy specialist. We know that that data set is one of our most underperforming populations, and so we need some additional support in that area. The Deaf and Hard of Hearing Working Group remains working. They're working on screening, curricular resources, and professional development. And our Dual Language Immersion Advisory Group is active as well. And they are starting with screening as their top priority. We are addressing concerns as they come to us. Key groups that had concerns about the READ Act are seeing success and momentum in the system and want to be part of that positive change. So we are constantly listening to our stakeholders and addressing their concerns. And our work in moving forward, looking into the 26-27 school year, We will be working to continue to develop support for evidence-based literacy practices, focusing on fidelity of implementation. Work to transition the approved phase one PD to be offered via the regional literacy network instead of the vendor. Phase two, professional development with the focus on secondary support. Respond to identified needs voiced through the district literacy leads and the local certified facilitators, community of practice. Developing learning modules for school principals. Promote self-guided early literacy course directly to parents through school districts and ECFE channel. Continue to explore deepen partnerships, opportunities with community partners. Continue to deepen the partnership with institutions of higher ed and to support schools in using the screening data to target instruction. And that is all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that presentation. Members, there will be time for overall discussion at the end of the presenters, but are there any questions right now concerning the slides we just saw? Okay. And I do actually have one question, a very good presentation, and I was looking at your slide with the impact on the MCA scores, which makes sense that the full impact isn't going to be seen until 2030, just because it takes time for the training, and then, of course, you've got all the early learning in kindergarten and first grade and so on, second grade. My question is, what's going to be done for the current, especially, let's say, second and third graders, because K-1 are going to get a lot of those foundational skills and then build upon them. Is there any plan for kind of catching up the second and third graders right now as this is in process?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead. Yes, thank you.
That's a great question. So we are, now that the intervention list has been made public, we are working with districts with those kids who are not reading at grade level in second and third grades through support with our Compass partners through the MTSS model. So we are co-training and co-partnering across the Compass system to really provide those tier two and tier three interventions.
Thank you. And I'm curious, because I know just from teaching early, first grade and so on, that kids can learn to memorize words and read at grade level until about third grade, and even if they have faulty reading skills as a foundation, but then they're going to start to falter after that. So even if they're reading at grade level, will they be assessed with these tools to determine, do they have the foundational phonetic and those types of skills, just to make sure they're not missing those gaps that will suddenly come bite them later?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So they will be screened through third grade, and in the upper elementary grades, they have implemented a read basics screening assessment, which is really works to identify those kids who might be slipping through the cracks. And we just implemented that this year, and it's received a lot of positive impact, just like kind of from educators, like, wow. They can read, but they didn't have the foundational skills.
Exactly, yeah.
So this screening assessment in fourth and fifth grade really identify that.
Thank you for that. I think that's important, too. Well, very good presentation. Thank you. And so, members, next we have Pelsby. And welcome to the table, and state your name for the record and begin. All right.
Chair Bennett, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Dr. Elena Bailey, and I'm the Executive Director of Pelsby. I have with me here today Dr. Lucy Payne, our Board Chair, and Aaron Doan, our Director of Teacher Preparation and Pathways. We're here to provide a update on Pelsby's role related to the READ Act, although I have to thank our good colleagues at MDE. They may have given away half the presentation for us. We do always like to start with our mission, which is ensuring all Minnesota students have high-quality educators in their classroom. Before I turn things over to Aaron to walk through the reading audit, I do want to provide just a brief overview of how that came to be. So when the first READ Act was passed, Pelsby really began to work with our teacher preparation providers and looking at how we can examine the way teacher candidates are prepared in literacy instruction. And so informally, we began looking at our reading standards in the fall of 2022, and then in January of 2023, we formally began what is called our reading audit process, and Aaron will speak to the details of that in a little bit. That is a three-year audit process that will be completed very soon. And you had an initial report from us in January of 2025, and you'll have a final report from us in August of this year. So we're looking forward to getting those final results out to you. And I will turn it over to Aaron Doan to walk through that reading audit process.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Our process really began with looking at the standards for each of the most critical areas within the Minnesota teacher preparation rules. That included elementary education, special education, early childhood, and coming soon on the tails of those English language learners, and to some degree, maybe at a deeper depth, the reading standards as well. As Minnesota is one of 18 of the Path Forward states, and the goals for that group really being to transform early literacy instruction by embedding the science of reading into teacher preparation, Pelsby was able to get feedback on those reading standards across states, and the results were overwhelmingly positive. As Dr. Bailey mentioned, there was a report in January of 2025, and there are direct results, and you can see that feedback embedded in that report. The standards at that point were noted as really strong, very specific across all five of the core pillar areas. So looking at that national expert review of our standards, we then turned to, if the standards are very strong and we're not seeing the results that we are expecting, perhaps there's an implementation gap. So we move forward in the process of the audit. Beyond that, we are looking at that multi-step audit process, which you heard a little bit about when we were here earlier. That high-level audit was really to look at the alignment to evidence-based practices and the alignment to the five pillars of reading, as well as dyslexia instruction requirements in statute. Once that was reviewed, if there were additional questions, the audit went on to a reading expert peer review at a deeper level. At that next level, there was a standard-by-standard review with the opportunity to clarify evidence, the learning opportunities, and assessments that were being used in the teacher preparation programs. Really, after going through that level, we are at a point of just looking at a few cleanup questions, and again, as we shared earlier and our colleagues shared with you, we are at about 89% of programs that have cleared the reading audit, and 15 that are remaining are in review as we speak. So we expect by June 30th of this year that programs will be fully compliant. A couple of other points to mention is that, as mentioned, we're working with our MDE colleagues to make sure that guidance is being provided to districts such that they have a list that they're able to rely on that allows districts to look up if teachers graduated from particular programs on particular dates, will they still need the professional development that's being required in schools? We're looking at that piece as a way of looking at sustainability, what will be required of teachers in an ongoing way, how much of that professional development will be required year over year going forward. And above and beyond that, really next steps for any implementation require us to look at sustainable practices for ongoing reading review. This level of review that we've already completed is not something that we would sustain at this level over years. So we're in need of additional tools to be able to manage that, that updating process. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Payne.
Thank you. Members of the committee, I'm here today to talk a lot about our reading rubric, work that we've been working on since 2024. And working at a teacher prep institution and going through that literacy audit is a very time-intensive piece. It's very important work. And we have found that sometimes it's not an implementation gap, but it was a communication gap in the way we present our syllabi and other things. And so the literacy audit was at the program level, very focused in on those specific licensure areas that were talked about earlier. However, we know reading is a K-12 teaching opportunity to our students. And so the work that we're doing now is moving us from looking at that one, just the individual programs, to looking at reading at the unit level. And so what you see on this slide is looking at standard 2 in the unit approval process that hits all the programs that a provider has in reading. They must meet this standard. So the tool is designed to meet this standard and review reading at that higher level, at the unit level, and the programs will be continuously monitored through the process we have in place for those every 3 years. But this allows us to go a little bit deeper and go beyond the baseline, right? We would love all of our programs to meet standards. We're finding that they are in the work that we're doing. But now we want to do more. We want continuous improvement for our teacher preparation and looking beyond the minimums and reaching even higher. So a group got together, a very diverse group of higher education faculty, K-12 support people in literacy positions, and we invited alternative preparation programs to join us, but they did not have the bandwidth at the time to join us, but we have consulted with them and shared with them along the way of this work. In addition to this group, another person that's not listed on this slide is we had a psychometrician join us who is an assessment expert, so they could look at the work and help to make sure that it was meets all the requirements for the good assessment tool. What's next on the slides show where we landed in thinking about this rubric. This rubric, the group had to come up with different domains or ways to look at literacy. We have the science of reading, the 5 pillars. We didn't want the 6 domains or the 6 pillars because that would be very confusing. So we went with the 6 domains or broad areas. As you look at this, domain 2 has those 5 pillars embedded in there, which cover the standards in that literacy audit. However, there are other areas that are very important when preparing teachers. And so in domain 1, you can see that we address foundational teacher knowledge. So we're looking at the seminal studies that they should be aware of and have read and understand the implications in their teaching. Then domain 2 addresses the literacy instruction around those 5 pillars. Domain 3 on the next slide looks at assessment. Which ties to the READ Act when we think about the screening data we're collecting, looking at our MCA data is what we're going to do with that information, and so we're preparing teachers in that space. It looks at the classroom environment, the literacy environment, making sure that those classrooms are engaging to our learners, and so that is tied in here in domain 4. Domain 5 is looking at meeting individual needs. This is where our dyslexia work sits, as well as ties to MTSS and other things you've heard about from our colleagues at the Department of Education. And then finally, looking very closely at those clinical experiences. I know you have a bill today thinking about those clinical experiences as well. So as we think about this, I clipped just a very small piece of this rubric, and this is domain 5. I clipped this one because of its tie to the work that MDE is doing with the MTSS framework and that important piece of the work for our teacher candidates. I will say technology is not our friend with this rubric because those little bullets you see everywhere should be checkboxes. These are things that the reviewers of the rubric are checking for. Every time I download it, it gets rid of my boxes and changes them to bullets. So the other nice thing about this rubric, as you can see, is we focused our work as directed by the psychometrician we're working with really on what does it mean to meet this standard, but then also looked and said, okay, we're going to have some concerns if we see these things and if you're not going to meet it if these things are missing. But you can see at the bottom, in some of these areas, we're starting to define exemplary, right? We're starting to highlight the programs that are doing very good work beyond what's expected. And so this is another good reason to pull this as an example. After the initial draft was done, again, because of the importance of sending it out for review, we sent it back out for national review. So the names on the slide here show people locally from universities who weren't involved in the original work, some of our school district folks in our state, but then other states as well, looking at the rubric and giving us feedback. Since then, Dr. Bailey and I have shared this rubric, and Dr. McGuire from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities and I have shared this with different audiences, and we've had a lot of interest in our work from the states of North Dakota, who is implementing a modified version of this, and then just this week we've heard from the state of Georgia, who's also interested in the work that we're doing, so we're being seen nationally as a leader in this space. As we wrap up this work that was started in 2024 as a summer project that we are wrapping up in summer 26, what we're hoping to do this summer is bring in our literacy faculty again for them to do some textbook alignment. We are not in the space to mandate textbooks for higher education due to academic freedom, but we can support them by doing some alignment work and showing that alignment to existing textbooks we know are highly aligned to the Science of Reading and to our READ Act. We are working with Pelsby staff, because it is their purview, to figure out the review structures, how to implement this within those existing processes already in place, and really working on focusing on this continuous improvement piece, because we can be better than our standards, and that's our goal. And so it is checking for compliance, but also really pushing us forward as a state to say we can do better. Finally, we are really working to foster this environment of collaboration and best practice across all of our institutions. With that, I'm gonna wrap it up there, but we'll say as we look at that last domain of that rubric and clinical experiences, I did mention you will be hearing a bill later today from Representative Clardy, and that bill does align to this work, and Pelsby as an agency supports that bill.
Thank you for that. Members, we do have some testifiers coming up, but any questions about the slides we just saw with Pelsby? Representative Mueller, you have a question on this? She'll wait till afterwards. Okay. We'll maybe move on then. Thank you for that. We'll have you just to step aside, but be ready for future questions. We'll start with our testifiers here. We have Amy Ledoux, Minnetonka Public Schools, and Alyssa Rutherford, Minnetonka Public Schools, if they could come up. And as soon as you're seated, if Ms. Ledoux would start and introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Amy Ledoux, Associate Superintendent for Minnetonka Public Schools. And with me today is Alyssa Rutherford, our District Literacy Coordinator.
Hi.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to provide a READ Act update, including our progress, as well as some of the challenges that we've faced. Ensuring each student is reading at grade level is the most essential academic and life skill we provide our students. We're so glad that our state is prioritizing this. Prior to the READ Act, Minnetonka launched an MTSS framework, established a literacy lead, and provided structured literacy professional learning. And yet, even with a strong foundation, the timelines continue to be challenging, particularly with changing guidance and expectations.
Our early childhood through grades 5 educators completed phase 1 training a year ago, and we trained paraprofessionals as well. As we plan for phase 2 training, only ELA, and one could infer immersion teachers, are funded. Yet we know that all teachers at the secondary level are integral to literacy instruction, particularly disciplinary literacy. While using FastBridge as an approved screener and implementing strong data analysis processes and protocols to guide instructional decisions, the addition of required nonsense words measures in grades 2 and 3 feels duplicative and impacts instructional time. Dual language immersion screening adds complexity, and future MDE guidance must reflect the research and unique context of these programs. Additionally, the 4 through 12 required screener CAPTI-READ Basics is not fully diagnostic, creating a continued need for follow-up assessments as we identify aligned evidence-based interventions, which guidance has just been released. As we implement new ELA standards and district curriculum, elementary teachers are navigating 2 highly aligned instructional resources new to them for word recognition and language comprehension, while also integrating professional learning done over the past 2 years.
Excuse me one second. If you could just state your name for the record so we've got that on the recording.
Yes, Alyssa Rutherford.
Thank you very much. Minnetonka Schools. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Ms. Liu. Yep.
Implementation has been intensive work for school districts across the state, and we know when our district team is working hard, our teachers are working even harder. Our elementary teachers are implementing entirely new approaches to literacy instruction while also managing every other content area. Over the next 2 years, this will be exacerbated by new standards, implementation, and major instructional shifts in both social studies and math. Our team of educators are deeply committed to ensuring every child becomes a capable reader. We ask for continued partnership, flexibility, and support so that the urgency of this work does not compromise its quality. We thank you for your time today and most importantly for your commitment to our students and would welcome any of you to visit our district if you'd like to see the READ Act in action.
Thank you so much to both of you for your testimony, and we'll have you step aside for now. There may be questions afterwards,
though. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have Kimberly Smith from Hopkins Public Schools. And Chris, I'm not sure how to say, I'm going to let Chris say Chris's last name, White Bear Lake School Board. And while they're coming up, I'll just give kudos to the White Bear Lake Public Schools because I attended the White Bear Lake Public Schools from kindergarten through seventh grade. So that was a long time ago. I actually just drove by my old elementary school. Is it Sunrise? I can't remember. It's by some apartment buildings where my grandparents used to live, but I walked there. Anyway, we're going to start. Enough of that rambling. Ms. Smith, we'll start with you, and then please introduce yourself for the record, and then when we switch over, introduce yourself for the record also. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kimberly Smith, and I'm the literacy lead in Hopkins, and I'm also the facilitator of a grassroots group of literacy leads from across the state. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an update on the successes and challenges of the implementation of the READ Act. Across Minnesota, districts are deeply engaged in this work, and many are seeing meaningful signs of progress. Teachers and paraprofessionals have embraced the training, leading to stronger instructional practices. Many districts report early improvements in literacy outcomes, particularly in the early grades, where structured literacy practices and aligned core resources are taking hold. In Hopkins, we're seeing statistically significant gains in classrooms where teachers have been letters trained, even larger gains when this is paired with high-quality materials, and most importantly, implementation support. One key to long-term success lies in that sustained, reliable, site-based implementation support. At the same time, there are significant challenges affecting the pace and quality of implementation. The most frequently cited barrier is funding. Districts are absorbing substantial, unplanned, ongoing costs, multiple screening tools, new curricula, intervention materials, staffing, stipends for extensive training beyond contract hours, and added leadership responsibilities. Many districts face difficult trade-offs to stay compliant. Additionally, guidance has often shifted quickly or arrived late. This makes it difficult for districts to budget, plan professional learning, and communicate early. The timeline has stretched teacher administrator capacity thin, especially in secondary settings where scheduling interventions is more complex. Graduation requirements and secondary intervention scheduling often force kids to be robbed of arts and electives related to their areas of interest. Ideally, a pathway that provides needed support and graduation requirements could be married. As you mentioned, Chair, our current intermediate, middle school, and high school students have gaps, and we're struggling to have the funding and structures to provide that needed support for the kids we're coming with this legislation too late for. Those are also the same kids who were impacted by COVID. Finally, there's two specific areas that would really benefit from significant support. Number one, initial legislation neglected to identify principals, district leaders, and other key roles in systems work in understanding the change management needed for this type of adaptive change. Number two, early intervention requires less funding than later intervention does. Our kindergartners are entering with more gaps than in the past. Many states are implementing early literacy screening and resources through pediatric visits, and this is a critical need for Minnesota students in ensuring that all students start school ready to learn. The READ Act is driving important progress, but without more stable guidance, sustained funding, and realistic timelines, the strain on local systems will continue to grow. Thank you for your time and continued attention to this work and for your commitment to improving literacy outcomes for every student in Minnesota.
Thank you very much for that. And by the way, it was Lake Eris Mount Elementary School. Thank goodness for Google, because my memory doesn't go back quite that far. So anyway, Ms. Smith, go ahead and begin. Introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair Bennett and members of the committee. My name is Chris Strife, OG, and I'm a school board member in White Bear Lake and the director of Compass Programming at Brightworks, a Minnesota service co-op serving the Twin Cities metro region. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today about the implementation of the READ Act in the White Bear Lake area schools. The intent of the READ Act is both important and appreciated. In the White Bear Lake area schools, many of the practices outlined in the READ Act are in place or underway. We're currently in our third year of implementing a K-5 evidence-based literacy curriculum aligned with the science of reading, reflecting our longstanding commitment to strong literacy instruction. We have invested significantly in teacher professional development through letters training to align instruction with research on how students learn to read. ESSER III funds allowed us to accelerate this work, but as those funds have ended, continued state investment in science of reading training will be important to sustain and deepen implementation across districts. We have approached this as a system-wide literacy effort, aligning our early childhood programs with letters practices so strong language and foundational literacy development begin before kindergarten. We are also expanding science of reading training to our first cohort of middle and high school teachers. At the same time, we're strengthening literacy interventions and our multi-tiered systems of support to ensure students who need additional help receive it. We are beginning to see encouraging results. Our winter fast bridge data shows that 77% of our kindergarten students are currently identified as low risk in early reading, a 15% increase from last year and a 21% increase over 3 years. We are also seeing progress in closing gaps for some student groups, including multilingual learners. We appreciate the state's investment in professional learning through the READ Act, particularly as educator prep programs vary in their emphasis on evidence-based literacy instruction. One area to consider strengthening is including principals in literacy professional learning, as research consistently shows school leaders play a critical role in improving instruction and student outcomes. Thank you for your commitment to improving literacy outcomes for Minnesota students. We really appreciate your partnership in this work.
Thank you for that. And if you have time to hang around just in case there are questions, that would be wonderful.
Thank you
so much. And those are some promising progress statistics. Thank you for sharing those. So we do have some discussion. Representative Mueller, did you have some comments or questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually have questions for both MDE and Pelsby. So if they
could come back up, and then whoever gets called upon first can introduce themselves and begin.
Awesome.
We'll let Representative Mueller, as soon as they get
Thank
settled in.
Thank you so
here.
Much. I don't even know where to start. This is there's so much exciting things that are happening and also so many questions that I have. And one of the things that I've talked about a lot is, you know, teachers have and schools have talked about how important this is. What I have been concerned is that we go upstream to make sure that we are plugging the hole. I don't want to continue giving schools teachers that aren't trained in the science of reading. That's why I'm very excited about the audit. So I went onto the website, and it doesn't look like it's been updated for a couple of years, and that's okay. I mean, you guys have a lot to do that you're doing. But one of the things that I noticed was the process of looking at how you did your audit, whoever is doing the audit. And the first one was that you had a high-level review, and if they found that they were satisfactory, then they were kicked out of the audit, they were done. So how many of the programs just only went through high-level audits and then they were done?
Who would like to take that? Go ahead and introduce yourself again, if you would, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Lucy Payne, Chair of Pelsby. Thank you, Representative Mueller, for that question. I do not have that data in front of me. I would have to ask our teacher education specialist at the agency, and we could have that sent to you of how many made it through the high-level audit and did not go through the more detailed audit.
Thank you for that, Representative Mueller. Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, I have, and maybe after a couple questions I can go offline, but you know, I was looking at some of the initial findings that we're talking about. Programs are looking at, that many programs are using text and other resources that promote 3Q-ing. Learning opportunities are not fully transparent, sometimes unclear. So I saw some of the initial findings that were published on the website. So as you are going through this, I saw the six domains. Are we just looking at syllabi, or do we actually see how they're teaching? How are some of these domains actually measured? And then I have one more question, Madam Chair.
Dr. Payne, is that for you?
Okay, go ahead. Madam Chair, Representative Mueller, thank you for the question. We are building the rubric to go beyond a syllabus audit, because one of the things we found in that syllabus audit in the page that you found, remember, is that in higher education with cybersecurity and concerns about hacking and things like that, a lot of our information is sitting behind firewalls, which makes it difficult for peer review. And so because of that, the syllabus audit was difficult for many because the files people need to see weren't easily accessible. So the way this is sitting is it sits at our unit review, which is a time where we have interviews and conversations with people, but also they provide evidence, and they will be able to provide syllabi if they would like. They could provide sample student assignments from teacher candidates. They could provide any number of things, right? We leave it up to the providers to determine how they would like to show us that they meet that criteria in that rubric.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And okay, that's good to know. I guess then this is a question to MDE. As I saw in your presentation that there is a discussion about exempting teachers from doing extra, the extra training if they graduate from these schools that have found compliant. Just 4 years ago, when I was sitting on this committee, we had people that said, I wasn't trained. I didn't know what to do. I don't know how to teach reading. They sat there. Your predecessor was with me sitting there saying, these teachers aren't trained in how to do reading and how to teach reading. So I want to know if these guys have been found to be compliant, have they changed? Are they actually compliant? And not saying that your assessment, your audit isn't good. It's just, when is that cutoff date going to be? Because I don't want it to just be like, yep, check. But these are the exact same schools that were coming to testify against us saying we don't want the READ Act. So I just wanted to make sure we're holding that. My last question, and I'll ask this just all together, is we were promised a report from MDE earlier, and I was just wondering when that could be expected. And that'll be my last question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Who would like to answer that?
Madam Chair, I can start.
Okay.
So the legislative report is 95% complete. What we've been waiting on is, so collecting the universal screening data was, you know, a first of its kind undertaking. So what we've been doing is, we had to build the system that collected that data. And so lots of lessons learned with that process. And so it took more time to clean and analyze the data. So we have recently been working to add a summary of that universal screening data into the READ Act legislative report and should have that very soon.
Thank you.
Now, the other question we might need to tag team on, we have been, as you know, offering waivers for teachers who can prove they've been through the training and have had the training. And I have to go back and look at my slides as to what I was referencing. Was it the teachers who have gone through the literacy lab experience?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's on your slide 18. It just says higher ed alignment to READ Act requirements. Educators who successfully complete one of these programs, who apparently have been found in compliant, will receive a waiver to professional development requirement.
Madam Chair, Ms. Representative Doan. Mueller, I think part of what you're asking was about how the audit factors into who will be determined to have met those outside of the current waiver process. And really, the dates that are being published are the dates by which the programs met all of the standards that were being reviewed and were fully compliant. So as MDE is using that document for guidance, they would be able to say any graduates after that date would receive that waiver.
Thank you. Good to go? All right, we have Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair Bennett. Thank you so much for the presentation. I have a question about on the slide that talks about local and how this is locally implemented. And on there it said 99% of districts have a local lead, like a literacy lead in district. I was wondering if someone could talk a little bit more about that. Like, is that one lead in the district that goes to different schools? Is that a teacher who... I'm just more curious. I know anecdotally in the districts I represent, it has been an enormous element to the READ Act and the implementation. And so that's why I'm asking the question.
Whoever would like that one, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a great question. What we have found is in statute, they had to identify a district lead by August of 25. And so we have been holding a district literacy lead community of practice. And some of what we're learning in through that community of practice is that not all district literacy leads may have the same qualifications as others or what we deem necessary to be a district or district literacy lead. So I could probably get into the data set that we've gotten from the local literacy plans to get kind of the breakdown of experiences of the district literacy leads, but we are working to raise the bar and get those who may not have had the training necessary to lead, be that district lead trained. So it's varied and we've noticed that. So we're trying to address the inconsistencies there.
Representative Green.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much for the answer. Yeah, I would love to learn a little bit more offline on that. I just want to make sure, too, that, like, when we talk about funding and the implementation, I think probably Rep. Mueller would agree with me, like, that's such an important element to this work, especially when you're crossing schools. You need to coordinate all of that to be efficient and effective. So that's why I asked the question. So I just want to call to everyone's attention. That's an important role. So thank you.
Good question. Chair Jordan, did you have any comments before we move on to the next bill?
No, let's just keep her moving. Thanks,
all
Madam
right.
Chair.
Sounds good. And thank you so much. I want to thank Pelsby and MDE for all of your work. I know this is, it's new for everybody. It's new for you as well as the schools. And there's a lot of scrambling. I know that. So we appreciate your work. And thank you. And I know there's a lot more work to do. So we'll keep this up because pretty soon, you know, we're going to look forward to Minnesota being top in the state in our reading. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Members, we are going to move on to House File 3421, Representative Clardy. So thank you for your patience, Representative Clardy, and welcome to the committee. And while Representative Clardy makes her way up, Chair Jordan, let's see, here we go, moves House File 3421 before the committee. There is an author's amendment. And we're going to adopt that amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author prefers, but we're going to let her get settled in. You did well walking up without your crutches there, Representative Clardy. So,
thank you.
I'm impressed. And while you're getting settled in, I'll just get through this part. Chair Jordan moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The A2 amendment has been adopted. So Representative Clardy, please present House File 3421 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Bennett and Chair Jordan, for allowing me to present House Bill 3421. This bill strengthens Minnesota's commitment to literacy by ensuring that every teacher candidate responsible for teaching reading receives a meaningful field experience by a supervisor grounded in evidence-based instruction. We know foundational literacy is one of the strongest predictors of long-term academic success, and we know high-quality instruction delivered by well-prepared teachers is essential for achieving it. The Minnesota legislature has invested a lot in the READ Act, and this supports that. To sustain this work, we must ensure that new teachers enter the classroom already prepared and equipped with the skills and practical experiences needed to deliver effective, evidence-based literacy instruction from day one. This bill adds a new subdivision, Minnesota Statute 122A.092, requiring teacher candidates to receive foundational literacy field-based work as part of their preparation before a license to teach. So this doesn't add any additional time to the time that they would normally be in school. It just makes sure that they're prepared. So beginning with, she's making me nervous with that camera over here. Okay, I'll ignore it. So beginning with candidates in 2027 and 2028 that are, beginning with candidates enrolling in 2027 and 2028 school year, this experience becomes a standard part of their preparation for anyone who will be teaching reading. So in short, candidates won't just learn the science of reading theory, they'll learn to apply it with real students and receive actionable feedback and demonstrate competency before they are licensed. And the bill also directs PELSBY to complete necessary rulemaking, and PELSBY will identify which areas of licensures will be required for this field experience. So obviously, if you're not teaching reading, you're not going to have to do this as part of your prep program. So at this time, the bill provides flexibility for prep programs so they can meet the requirements in the way that's aligned to their delivery models and their student population. So basically, the essence of this bill is to make sure that schools have an aspect of their program where teachers actually get hands-on experience with real kids and not just stuck in the theory world.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. And we have three testifiers. We're going to begin with Akila Roberson, not sure. Ms. Roberson, if you could make your way up. And we're going to start. Then after that, we have two remote testifiers coming up. Roberson, thank you. So Ms. Roberson, please state your name for the record and proceed, and please keep your comments to 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Dr. Akila Roberson, Policy Director at Education Evolving, an organization that promotes transformational student-centered designs for learning. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 3421. Whose woods these are, I think I know. He will not see me stopping here. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. These words penned by Robert Frost and stopping by woods on a snowy evening vividly depicts a terrific responsibility of leadership. Every action and decision must be in the best interest of those entrusted in your care. Certainly, this is the case for teachers, educators, who work closely in service to our students. Research consistently shows that prepared, quality teachers are the most important factor in student achievement. At Education Evolving, one of our missional pursuits is to uplift and come alongside our educators, supporting them in curating a safe, supportive learning environment where creativity, academic rigor, and ignited intellectual curiosity are tangible for students. One way this is made possible is through teacher preparation programs where supervised field experiences, accessible supports, and mentorship are foundational. We've done extensive research around teacher preparation, recruitment, and retention. HF 3421 aligns with the common need echoed across that research. More opportunities for supervised field experiences where real-time application of learning was possible. Within the context of literacy, HF 3421 is a move towards improving the quality of early education through prescribed and practical application of literacy strategies. Hands-on experiences reduce the gap between pre-service training and classroom reality, making new teachers more effective from day one. This bill allows our teachers to be prepared as they have miles to go before they sleep in their teaching journey, and it ensures that we keep our promise in supporting them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Roberson. I love the Robert Frost quote at the beginning. Next, we have two remote testifiers. We're going to begin with Aaron Gillette, and again, state your name for the record and proceed, and please keep your comments to 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Chair Jordan, Chair Bennett, and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Erin Gillette, and I am a professor of early childhood education at Minnesota State University, Moorhead. I teach literacy foundations and methods courses in both our elementary and early childhood education programs at MSUM. I am here in support of HF 3421, Early Literacy Field Experience. HF 3421 improves the preparation of teacher candidates by ensuring they have a field experience dedicated to teaching literacy in a primary grade classroom. At MSU Moorhead, we are addressing this by strengthening one of our existing field experiences. This year, we are piloting a direct tutoring supplement to the field experience. Throughout the semester, while they are in their practicum, my students spend part of each morning tutoring two children from their classroom. After conducting an initial assessment, my students teach, observe, and assess their students during each tutoring session, engaging in the same plan, teach, assess, decision-making process that practicing teachers use. My students have gained authentic experience teaching children to read, and in the process have grown confident and knowledgeable about teaching reading using practices grounded in the science of reading. This bill creates a consistent, high-quality link between coursework and real-world application, which strengthens all teacher preparation programs across the state. In turn, this experience strengthens the READ Act by linking educator prep programs and the K-12 field. On behalf of higher education literacy faculty, I ask that you support HF 3421. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for your testimony. And next we have Isaac Martin. And whenever you're ready, state your name for the record and proceed and keep your comments to 2 minutes, please.
Chair Jordan, Chair Bennett, and members of the committee. My name is Isaac Martin, and I am a third year early childhood education major at Minnesota State University Moorhead. I am here in support of HF 3421, Early Literacy Field Experience Bill. HF 3421 improves teacher preparation in Minnesota by requiring a field experience in a primary grade classroom to apply literacy instruction skills. This gives students like me valuable experience teaching using practices informed by the science of reading. It's crucial for teacher candidates to be prepared to teach young learners how to read properly before they take on the role of a lead teacher. Supervised, hands-on, and structured practice in a primary grade classroom is the most beneficial way to ensure that teacher candidates like me are prepared to teach children to read when we begin our careers. Unfortunately, many candidates do not get this opportunity to practice their learning in an elementary classroom. I feel lucky to have had ample opportunity to apply my knowledge of the science of reading through whole class and individualized lessons through a structured, sequential tutoring program. In my 10 weeks tutoring three students, I have given assessments, collected and recorded data, and tracked real progress in my students' phonics skills. This authentic experience built my confidence greatly, assuring me that using these evidence-backed practices does truly have a positive effect on students' progress. I also now know how to explicitly teach students how to read. Having a required early literacy teaching experience as a teacher candidate built my confidence as a teacher and opened me to the possibilities within my licensing range. I entered college with plans to become a preschool teacher. Creating and teaching lessons to a third grade class was an enlightening experience that showed me a new perspective on teaching. On behalf of future teacher candidates, I ask that you support HF 3421. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, just to give you a heads up, we will have more member discussion available for this particular bill. but I'm just going to have Chair Jordan to give a few comments. We have another presentation. So, Chair Jordan, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. And thank you, Representative Clardy. I also really want to thank our testifiers on this, in particular, Mr. Martin. Thank you for your testimony to talk about what it's like to actually have this as a current teacher candidate and future teacher, hopefully in Minnesota schools. So that is, your perspective is very helpful. And thank you, Representative Clardy, for your work on this bill. I think we're all thinking about how we can best support our teacher candidates. And it's clear that bills like this both help our students and help our teachers have fulfilling careers. So thank you for your work on this. And I'll turn it over to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for those comments. And Representative Clardy, I'll give you some final comments just to let you know this is a good bill. We're going to lay it over right now, likely bring it this back up for moving it on. But would you like some closing comments at this time?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to see Isaac teach, and I was so amazed. He was a new student, and he was able to do what I had seen classroom teachers maybe not having the ability to do, not ability, that's a wrong choice of words, having the opportunity to do. He was so confident in his instruction, and the students were just eating out of his hand. And then his ability to explain how he moves the kids along with doing just general assessments showed me that he really understood the science of reading theory, but also the practice of what he was doing. So I hope that we know that our teachers need to be prepared to teach when they enter the door, and programs like this would support that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. So the chair lays over House File 3421 as amended for further consideration at a later date. Thank you for that presentation of the bill. And members, next on our agenda is a presentation on evidence-based math. And as noted, we've made changes to reading instruction, relying on the science of reading. And now many, including myself, are looking at how math instruction could be improved using evidence-based practices. While the science of reading is fairly well defined and understood, defining evidence-based math and numeracy is more open to discussion. That is the purpose of our discussion today. So I'm pleased to have joining us Patrick Lyons. He is with the National Conference of State Legislatures, and he will give us a presentation on evidence-based math. He's going to be followed by MathCorps, who as of last year, thanks to the work on this committee, is now required to use evidence-based math in their program. So Mr. Lyons, thank you so much for being here. And again, welcome to our committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your presentation.
All right, good afternoon. Thank you, Co-Chair Bennett and Jordan, for having me today. My name is Patrick Lyons. I'm a senior policy specialist with the National Conference of State Legislatures. If you're unfamiliar with NCSL, we are a nonpartisan legislative research and service organization serving all state legislators and legislative staff across the country, covering much more than education, but I'm excited to come here and talk to you about that today. I specifically cover K-12 math literacy, so I've really enjoyed the conversation we've had so far today. But as you mentioned, Chair, we're here to talk about evidence-based math education and state actions in the last few years to support strengthening outcomes. So, of course, why states are investing in mathematics, I probably don't need to tell you all some of the same reasons you all are interested in this today. But, of course, math proficiency is linked to higher college graduation rates, increased college participation, and, of course, better workforce readiness. States also, and particularly state legislatures, control the key levers for improvement. Things like standards and assessments, funding and accountability, teacher preparation and support. And we are having struggles across the nation with math. Our most recent tranche of NAEP scores show that about 28% of eighth graders are proficient in math. We're going to talk about why eighth grade is particularly important in that road to being ready for algebra after eighth grade. And notably, we are also seeing declines among lower performing students and medium performing students, which means the gap between our high performers and our low performers is growing. So one of the things I was asked to do today was talk a little bit about evidence-based math instruction. I was excited to see the handout you all have from the Council of Mathematics Teachers. I thought there was a lot of great information in there. I'll do my best to meet the high bar they set. One of the things when we talk about evidence-based mathematics is having evidence-based materials. Well, what does that mean? How do we know what is evidence-based? Well, broadly, those are resources, curricula, assessment tools that have been rigorously tested through research and peer-reviewed studies. One of the most common ways to understand if something is evidence-based is to look at resources like the What Works Clearinghouse. You'll see here they have different levels of evidence, whether something is strong, moderate, or minimal. Also, the ESSA legislation, National Piece of Legislation, had their own levels of evidence base, and that was ranging from Tier 1 to Tier 4. So hopefully this slide can be a resource for you as you look to set your own standards for what that means. Evidence-based mathematics standards and practice. So on these next couple of slides, the bold bit is the standard that is evidence-based and that is what we might be shooting for our students, and the practices are how students can help them get there. First is to make sense of problems and persevere in solving them. This hits on a couple different things. I think we've all heard the conversations about math culture, making sure kids feel confident in math skills and understand that every kid can be a math kid. I know that was something that even in growing up, I was given the opt-out of being able to say I'm not a math kid. I don't say that anymore, and we shouldn't have that in our schools. But the other bit here is having multiple solution strategies, the idea that not only should kids understand some functional math, but they should be able to think about strategically applying it to the solution in front of them. It's also important to model with mathematics, being able to go from the abstract to the concrete when we're solving math problems. This looks a lot of different ways. I've been in early learning classrooms. That's another topic I cover for NCSL, and it's kids jumping along number lines. It's using colored cotton balls and pie tins to make recipes, and all things that are more tactile and connect to the real world in real ways help students conceptually do better in math. We want to help students attend to precision. That's using clear, concise math language. Interesting here, one of the easiest things we talk about in early learning is just using math numbers when you talk to kids, right? Instead of saying, pick up the blocks, it's pick up those three blocks. It really helps kids start to supertize and use math language more readily. We want to look for and make use of structure. Teach students to recognize common underlying structures in various problems and how to determine the appropriate solution for each. Again, this is the idea of being strategic in your math problems. It's not the flashcards that many of us might have grown up with. That is not unimportant, but it is important to be strategic and have a higher level understanding of how to use mathematics. And I guess this last point gets to what I just said is, as much as we want to think at a high level, it is important to practice and have regular procedures that you do fairly often in your classrooms. So how do we learn mathematics? We're going to step back and talk about just the cumulative nature of math learning. So as I said, mathematics learning is cumulative. Students must master a sequence of foundational skills to be prepared for future content in math. This is an interesting graphic. Our friends from New Classrooms put this together, and they talk about the iceberg problem and this hidden gap in student learning that we often don't address or have struggles to get at. And so what you see here is the gray bars that align at the top of this kind of staircase are the skills that are tested in every year. So we can just start at the far left side. In fourth grade, there's 42 skills that are part of a grade level test and being proficient in fourth grade. Now, to actually master those skills, you must have already mastered 22 skills in preschool to fourth grade. And you can see as you move up the staircase, the number of prerequisite skills that you must already know to be able to master the grade level skills that you're presented in that given year grow all the way until we get to algebra, where we're actually looking at, and people could quibble about these exact numbers, but 148 unique skills that are required to be ready for algebra. And when students are missing any of these skills, it's impossible to master the new skills. And so it's important to have, and we'll talk much more about this, but have assessment tools that can be sophisticated in identifying these gaps and being strategic in helping fill those knowledge gaps so that they can be ready to take on new learning. So a lot of this, you'll hear things like math learning trajectories, personalized pathways, things like that. That's usually what people are talking about when they think about all the different skills required to be proficient in mathematics. So I said earlier I talked about eighth grade being important, and that is because a number of states are looking at the idea of being ready for Algebra 1 by the end of eighth grade as being a bit of a North Star or something their systems need to be focused on. But it cannot start in middle school. It needs to start all the way at, in your pre-K space, truly. And that's evidenced by all the skills needed to be ready for that. But why is Algebra 1 important? Well, it's a key predictor for students' future academic and workforce success. But like I said, it's a trajectory, and we need to make sure we're kind of tracking the progress towards that at every step of the way. Where we run into issues in some states is limitations of a grade-level-only approach. This is the idea that perhaps you're in a fifth-grade classroom. Well, in a fifth-grade classroom, you have a fifth-grade textbook and fifth-grade materials, and that is what you have to work with for your students if you're a teacher. But research has shown that in any given classroom, you might have up to 5 different grade levels present in terms of what your students know and can do. And like we said, there's so many different skills that students must master along the way that the skill gaps are going to be different. Even if you have 2 students who, you know, might grade out as performing 2 grade levels below, they might be missing different foundational skills along the way. So that's why high-quality assessments are really important. What we're talking about here is sophisticated assessments that can help identify these key missing skills. This allows for accelerated and targeted intervention, which helps students catch up faster. A lot of what we hear in the research is you want to get kids back into the Tier 1 process as quickly as possible. People might disagree, but there is a push in some places to talk about let's fill those key gaps that are related to Algebra 1 or the path towards Algebra 1. Let's not do everything they might have missed in second grade. Let's identify those key skills they're missing and focus on those. That's at least one approach to consider to help kids get back on track and make sure they're not missing time in their core and Tier 1 classrooms. So as I said, I do early learning for NCSL as well, so I tend to kind of talk about this maybe too much, but early numeracy is the basis of everything here. Early numeracy predicts later success in math and reading. Like I said, I was excited to hear the reading conversation earlier, and I think sometimes we silo math and reading a little bit too much. You can do a lot of math teaching using kids' books, right? You can talk about spatial relations and shape recognition and things like that while you're doing basic early literacy work as well. So these things do work together to help improve outcomes. And there's actually been studies that show high quality early numeracy can be linked, even controlling for all the other factors along the way, can be linked to college attendance for students. Why it's important to focus on this is that students who have not had access to high quality early learning experiences are pretty prevalent in our systems. In 2022, over 30% of 3- and 5-year-olds were off track in pre-literacy and math skills when they got to kindergarten on those kindergarten assessments that most states use. And so, again, it comes back to being able to have sophisticated assessments and multi-grade level materials to be able to address skill gaps when you figure out what those are. So what are high-quality early numeracy assessments? Well, this is expanding. We're getting new and better ones every year. The problems with a lot of what we have right now is they are too narrowly focused often, and they can be burdensome to administer, right? What you want is you want assessments that fit naturally into the early learning day and setting. Anyone who's tried to manage a classroom full of 3- to 5-year-olds knows it's very difficult and can be also very difficult if you're trying to do pull asides or, rigorous kind of testing. I'm probably not doing a great job explaining that, but what you want is something that fits into your already natural flow of what your students are doing on a daily basis. You also want to look at more than just basic skills. A lot of what we test right now is basic things like number and shape identification, which is great and is part of math standards, but there is so much more that students learn and know in those early years that we should be on track for. And then, of course, align it with your early math standards and provide actual insights and engage your teachers and families when you're choosing or refining your assessment tools. That's always important, especially in the early years. So here's the state actions. Here's maybe why I'm here, because one of the great things we do at NCSL is we track legislation all around the country. You can reach out to us anytime for information on what other states are doing. We provide customized confidential research requests for any legislator or legislative staff who asks for them. But anyway, early math, what we're seeing is a number of different bills here. All the way back in 2020, Utah step forward and put forth K-3 mathematics benchmark assessments. This is the assessment is to be administered 3 times a year. It is optional in kindergarten, but it's required for grades 1 to 3. Again, they just wanted to really get on top of what their kids knew in the early years regarding mathematics. Alabama Numeracy Act. This is a massive effort that we are following very closely at NCSL. This started in 2022, and it started with a reorg of their state government. They added an office within the Department of Education called the Office of Mathematics Improvement to have their eyes specifically on doing better in mathematics. Of course, like many of the bills I'll talk about today, they require the use of evidence-based math instruction and materials. They also provide instructional coaches in all K-12 schools. They do this based on the population of the school. So we'll see for every about 800 students, there's another instructional coach. And importantly, these are resources for the teachers. They work on instructional quality. They do not work directly with students. They don't sub in and cover recess. They are specifically there to help improve instructional outcomes. And then also part of this bill is there are significant new accountability standards for schools to make progress on math and a number of carrots and sticks if they do not do so. They're in the early stages of rolling this out. We should have some really good outcome data here by the end of this year. If not before, I think it's being analyzed now. So this is something to definitely keep your eye on. It is a major effort in focusing on math. And then we go to Mississippi. You may have heard of the Mississippi Miracle in Reading. Well, they are looking to improve every part of their early learning work. They have adopted their own Mississippi Beginnings curriculum that will be required to be used in all state pre-K classrooms in the next year or so. It builds off of the Boston Public Schools model, which is highly touted and highly effective. And it is focused on intentional hands-on math instruction. So more to come from what's going on in Mississippi as well. So personalized pathways, I mentioned this is an important concept and something to consider. North Dakota, they created a pilot program to implement a math tool with 3 main components. It's, of course, a universal math screener. Like I said, we're going to see that a lot through these bills. And they are opting for those kind of screeners that can precisely diagnose what students know and don't know to create personalized learning plans for each student. And of course, they are giving student or teachers access to supplemental programs to implement the learning plan. In Virginia, their fiscal year 26 budget, they do biannual budgeting, so this was done last year and will be implemented this year. They're focused on competency-based and evidence-based mathematics learning. That's, again, recommendations on instructional guides and evidence-based resources, right, those curriculums and assessments. But they're also overseeing a statewide professional development framework for evidence-based teacher training and regional professional development networks focused specifically on improving mathematics. Back in 2023, California put together a mathematics framework. Why I put this here and why it's important is because they focus on coherence between core and supplemental instruction. Maybe this is obvious, perhaps it's already happening here, but in some states and some districts, once you get down to the local level, there is not. They are using assessment tools that are not aligned with the curriculum they're using, and that just, of course, creates some natural friction and lack of efficiency. So this framework focuses on fixing that. Indiana, they're requiring all students to take a math diagnostic screener, again, something we see a lot, and doing differentiated interventions, again, personalized pathways. But also what I thought was interesting is automatic enrollment in advanced math. I put this in here for that specifically. One of the great things about having these sophisticated tools and being able to do multi-grade level teaching is we can also help those students who are advanced continue to have challenges and continue to progress and move along. A personalized pathways model is not all about remediation. It's about meeting the needs of all students and helping those who want to continue and go further do so, helping those who need to catch up do so. It can really work for everyone, but it does require sophisticated tools and a real focus on personalized learning. And of course, and that kind of gets to this Texas bill. So the Texas Department of Education released an RFP and a rubric for evaluating supplemental instructional materials, and that it's encouraging the tools that span multiple grade levels and adapt to what we're learning about individual students through diagnostic tests, assessments, basically. And supporting educators. We all know that the resources and training and support that educators have is the biggest factor in driving outcomes in classrooms. We all, you know, anyone who's had a great teacher knows this. So, I point to some of the research being done from the National Council on Teacher Quality. They're state levers to strengthen math instruction. They have a new resource out that I linked to that goes across the country and looks at how states are performing on supporting their teachers in math. They would look at setting specific detailed math standards for the teacher prep programs, and then, of course, review how their teacher prep programs are providing math instruction. They also recommend adopting a strong elementary math licensure test and requiring all elementary candidates to pass this test. They require districts to select high-quality math curriculum and support skillful implementation. Again, we saw that through many of the bills we've talked about so far. And provide professional learning and ongoing support for teachers to sustain effective math instruction. A couple bills that relate to this. So the Colorado Department of Ed in 2023 offered a free optional training and evidence-informed math instruction for elementary and secondary educators. I think part of the reason this was optional is because they are in the process of continuing to implement their own READ Act and doing a lot of required professional development. So they didn't want to have too many requirements at once. That is some feedback I sometimes get from this presentation is we're asking a lot of teachers all at once, but anyway, I digress. Colorado also updated their teacher prep and licensure requirements by requiring evidence-informed teacher-informed math training for elementary and middle school and secondary math endorsements. They also add early numeracy to the preschool teacher professional development requirements, and Colorado is one of those states who is expanding access to state-funded pre-K, and so they're doing so with an eye on quality. Iowa. This is another bill that talks about a comprehensive state mathematics plan. They are also putting forth new valid and reliable math screeners to be used 3 times a year. That's another thing we're seeing. We're seeing an increase in the frequency and it being much more prescriptive of you will assess students, you know, up to 3 times a year with these new screeners that we're helping roll out. And the we in that is whatever state's given Department of Ed. And they're also providing professional development opportunities. And lastly here, we're excited about what we saw in Kentucky in 2024, the Kentucky Numeracy Act. This is, again, trying to be a comprehensive effort, a little bit scaled down from what we might have seen in Alabama. But there's funding here for professional learning, evidence-based instructional materials focused on the K-3 spectrum, which I think, again, just doubles down on the importance of those early years. And they are requiring the Department of Ed to assist school districts in identifying high-quality math curriculum and provide coaching and support for teachers and offering numeracy screeners. So the key takeaways here are that, of course, early math is foundational to long-term success. Assessments in curriculum quality matter greatly. Evidence-based and they must be evidence-based and there must be alignment between core and supplemental materials. A personalized multi-grade approach can really help students catch up and help students accelerate, and that teacher supports are essential for sustained improvement. I know that's a lot. I hope this can be the start of a conversation. As I said at the start, NCSL is your resource. You can reach out to me or my colleagues at any time for more information on any of these things. But that is the end of my prepared remarks today. But I hope this is not the end of our conversation about math and other things. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Very interesting. And I know you took a flight to get here. Where did you come from?
Yes, NCSL is headquartered in Denver, came in this morning from Denver.
Thank you for coming to Minnesota.
Thank you for having me.
And we want the Minnesota double miracle here, so reading and math. There we go.
Well, and I am from Michigan, so it's great to be back in the Great Lakes region.
Good to have you here.
Even in February.
Members, before we go on to our member questions, I'm going to ask Julia Quinard from the Serve Minnesota to present on behalf of Math Corps. And hopefully we can keep it to about 5 minutes so we can get some member questions in, but appreciate this is very interesting. So thank you. Go ahead and proceed and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Julia Quinard, and I am the CEO of Serve Minnesota, the State Commission on National and Community Service. We were created by the legislature about 2 decades ago to administer the state's AmeriCorps programs and public service programs, and our duties include ensuring that those programs prepare a citizenry that is academically competent and ready for work. So today I'll cover 3 topics. I'll underscore how Math Corps is built on the importance of proven instruction, assessment, and early intervention, as we just heard. I'll talk a little bit about the economic value that evidence-based math instruction brings to our state. And I'll talk about how improving math skills has spillover effects beyond math class. So we built Minnesota Math Corps using the following principles. 1, math instruction should not just be evidence-based, it should be proven to work. Math Corps has been subjected to multiple randomized control trials that prove that not only do student skills grow when they're in Math Corps, but they grow because that student is in Math Corps. Second, as our previous testifier said, strong outcomes really rely on timely and valid assessment. And those tools help Math Corps identify students that need support early, but it also helps us know that the intervention they're receiving through Math Corps is actually making a difference. And at a statewide level, we're able to roll those results up and really look to see that the state is making significant gains in math, the kinds of gains that are necessary to close gaps. So last year, for example, I can tell you because of assessment that 57% of our Math Corps students increased their performance by at least 20 percentage points. And that growth is associated with more than doubling their likelihood of meeting grade level standards. Finally, the sooner that we identify students that need help, the better. Gaps in a student's foundational math knowledge tend to snowball with time, so we work really closely with the math teachers in our partner schools to identify students early that need support. We actually started as a program in grades 4 through 8, and we heard from our schools that they wanted a program for younger students, so we now offer Math Corps in grades K through 3 as well as in our preschool program. Thanks to the legislature's support, Math Corps is an affordable option for Minnesota schools all across the state. And at a time of tight state budgets, we are committed to delivering a really strong value for the state. Researchers have identified Math Corps as the most cost-effective tutoring program in the country for math. And we have studied the strong return on investment that the state gets when they invest in Math Corps. And all that being said, despite those strong results, far too many students are being referred to Math Corps for additional help. As we think about how to transform math outcomes statewide, we are looking to our larger program Reading Corps for how we might take a look at some systemic change. In Reading Corps, we partner with the University of Minnesota to look at the literacy lab experiences that were mentioned earlier, and we also work on how do we license more Reading Corps tutors to become teachers. We also are working on curriculum and instruction. We have a program called Bridge to Read that is built out of Reading Corps and is meant to support and celebrate our teachers and support them in implementing the READ Act. And so we're trying to look at how some of those initiatives that we've developed in Reading Corps might give us inspiration for continued innovation in Math Corps. This is not just about academic success. We have researched the outcomes that Math Corps students have beyond their academic performance, and we know that Math Corps students not only feel that they belong in school when they're in Math Corps, but they also feel more confident in school. And their math confidence has spillover effects to other subjects in schools. We also know that math skills are tied to workforce preparedness as well as GDP. And we know that many Minnesota parents and colleges right now are paying for remedial math instruction because of the gaps in students' knowledge. So fundamentally, Math Corps is significantly reducing the number of Minnesota students that have those gaps in math knowledge, which in turn is improving their mental health and the state's economic well-being. We remain committed to working in partnership with you, with our schools, with our teachers, to address this math issue, and we are very grateful for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much, and I always appreciate both Reading Corps and Math Corps and your evidence-based instruction, so thank you. Members, we're going to take a moment here and see if we have any questions or just brief comments. Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. Quick couple questions for Math Corps. Thank you for your presentation today and what you do for our state. But just for background, could you tell me how many schools you are in the state of Minnesota and how many students you tutor per year?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. Thank you for the question. This school year, we are in 232 schools in Minnesota. There are additional preschool centers that are probably part of that as well, but it's counted in a different way. We are currently serving a little over 8,000 students. We expect that to grow a little bit more. And then next year, we are actually hoping to get to about 10 or 11,000 students.
Okay. Representative Lawrence, any follow-up?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be possible to get a list of those schools at some point in time? Not today, but if that'd be possible. I'd like to request that, maybe, if that'd be fine.
Madam Chair, Representative, we would be happy to provide that list.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Members, Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Math Corps is such an important piece of our education for students across the state. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the math core that is provided to students during the summer months.
Go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair, Representative, at this time, Math Corps doesn't have an official summer school program. I think what we know is that a lot of our tutors may work in a summer program and they will use their Math Corps training. So we have sort of like unofficial Math Corps that's happening. A couple of years ago, I will say that we had the opportunity, we had one-time COVID relief funds from our federal funder, and we started to pilot Reading Corps in summer school programs, and we are preparing to enter the third or fourth year of Reading Corps this coming summer. So it's an area of innovation that we're hoping to explore in the future. We just we're trailing behind Reading Corps a little bit.
Representative Green.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, thank you so much. I just know that I met some of the Math Corps tutors in the summer in my district, and they were just talking about that growth and like the acceleration of growth when we have the extra supports over the summer. So just a plug for the funding and to keep this program going for our students. So thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had some questions for Mr. Lyons, if he's willing to come back to the table. And I heard you say that we shouldn't refer to ourselves as non-math people, which is something that I often say. And when you said that, I just thought back to all of the like panic attacks I had in calculus and in like algebra 2, and just like that like has stuck with me and is, still makes me feel like a non-math person. So thank you for that confidence boost. I'm wondering if you can. I think it's great to see so many of these proposals from other states. I think that's one of the great things that NCSL offers. Do you have any, where does Minnesota stack up in this? We do, you know, fairly well, like when you look at like our test scores compared to other states in math. But I think we should all be, you know, I don't want our Minnesota students to like break out in hives in calculus class like I did. That's a true story. What should we be doing there? Are there areas where we do really well? Are there areas where we need to focus more on? I think we've been talking about the science of math last year with the Representative Ray Rauer bill, but what more do we need to do to stack up to these other states?
Mr. Lyons.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. First, NCSL would never be in the business of telling you what you need to do. I would be happy to do a little more, comparison and looking at your current programs. I didn't quite have time to get into that for this presentation. I believe I did see that on the NAEP scores, you are above the national average in both fourth and eighth grade. I believe that's the case, so that is good. But again, the national averages for proficiency are fairly low, and I don't think are what we all want for our students anyway. So I guess I'll say I'd be happy to continue the conversation, but right now I don't know if I could put a grade on it or anything like that.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. And so then to CEO Quinard, I hope I pronounced that correctly. What trends have you noticed from your volunteer? I mean, you've served Minnesota's been doing this for many, many years, as you mentioned. What trends have you noticed? We've all talked about the dip from the pandemic. I've been hearing from educators in my district that they're seeing the very recent trend is because of Operation Metro Surge and the ICE activity in my district of Minneapolis. There has been a dip in students' abilities again. But what long-term trends or short-term trends have you noticed and have your volunteers noticed?
Ms. Quinard.
Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, it's Quandred, thank you. Many people struggle with it. What we've noticed, I think in the long term, we would agree that the NAEP scores are maybe a little bit misleading. There is a truly unacceptable number of Minnesota students right now that are not meeting standards in math, and that has been the case for a while. What we are hearing from our tutors, I think we have a little bit of an interesting story. I mentioned that Math Corps expanded to younger grades a few years ago, and we made the choice to expand to K through 3 in 2019. And so we were really implementing that right as COVID was entering. It was also when we started to really look at the effect that Math Corps has on student self-esteem as well as student sense of belonging in school. And so what we are seeing is we are certainly seeing, I mean, we're we're certainly seeing some of the effects that you're hearing about related to COVID on academic performance, but we are also seeing really positive success, particularly in that K through three space. And so there was testimony about the importance of early math, and we are very much seeing that in our Minnesota schools that are implementing that kindergarten through third grade program. And we are also seeing that kids are really happy to see their tutor. They're building relationships with their tutor, and they experience more joy in school when they're finding success in math.
Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was another trend that I remember from a while ago, is there was a gender gap in math. And some of that I think is cultural, certainly. And so I'm just wondering if that is still an issue, if we're still seeing some of that aspect. And I mean, I don't know if either of the testifiers could mention that, but are there any, there used to definitely be a cultural impact on how we taught math based off of many things. I mean, my mom is an EL teacher and remembers the way that her students were taught math differently depending on their country of origin. So I'm wondering if there are further beyond like this core science of math, for lack of a better phrase. I think that hat tip to you, Chair Bennett, for coming up with the science of math. But are we seeing other kind of cultural barriers as well to how we teach math apart from just kind of the, you know, things outlined in this report with the benchmarks and early interventions?
Go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, I'll speak from the Minnesota Math Corps experience. I do think that there is, I would agree with my fellow testifier, that there is this stigma around math that even with probably many of the adults in this room, there are many who would probably say, you know, that they're not a math person. And what we find is that stigma tends to really cascade. And so you have, I once was in a preschool classroom working with a four-year-old, and that four-year-old told me that they were not good at math. So that message is having an effect. And importantly, I think what effective math instruction does is it shows kids that when we do something hard and we struggle with it, there are ways that we can persist and work through that challenge, and that builds resilience and the appetite to try that again and again. And so when we have effective instruction that really kind of supports, you know, math is not necessarily easy, but we want to sort of step, you know, create a scaffolding for that student to kind of hit that challenge and grow. That's where we tend to see kids really start to skyrocket. In terms of gender, one of the things we do look at is Math Corps working for all Minnesota kids, and we look at that on a regular basis. We don't see a huge variance for students around gender. I think what we do see, though, is that we hear that story of I'm not a math person perhaps a little bit more, not just with our kiddos, but also sometimes with our tutors. And interestingly, the average Math Corps tutor is probably a woman and probably experienced struggle with math herself. And our research also says that people who can relate to the experience of struggling with math oftentimes are the most effective tutors because they can relate to the struggle and then support that student in working through the struggle.
Mr. Lyons, do you want to just do you have any addition to that? And then I'll go back.
Yeah,
to
I can add just a little bit. Yeah. Thank you to both co-chairs and my fellow testifier for that. I would agree with everything that was said first and foremost there, and just go on to say that I think that is also why states are focusing on professional development, particularly in the early elementary school years, where, I mean, across the education spectrum, most teachers are women. And there's been a number of studies that have said that math is the place where they feel least confident in their abilities, especially in the early years. So helping boost those abilities will help them support their kids. And I think the other thing we're seeing, and I should have done maybe a better job of putting this in my slides, but some of the math bills we've seen have included resources and funding to bring home resources for families to work on math. Because again, many students are from families where they aren't confident. I'm from a family where my mom said she didn't like math. She had a terrible experience with math. And so, and of course that gave me a permission structure to see myself as not a math person. And you know, I think additionally, especially in the early years, families inherently know reading with my kids is helpful, right? That'll help their literacy skills. But sometimes it's a question of what can I do for math? And so states are investing in resources to bring home for math as well to help with math anxiety and just to give some real concrete solutions for helping students.
Thank you. Chair Jordan, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just am finding myself a little bit emotional actually hearing that because I've said that about myself many times. And I've heard that said more times than I can. Maybe I could ask Mr. Strom how many times he's heard a legislator declare themselves to not be a math person at this table. But I think this is, I'm glad we're taking some time to talk about this, and I'm really excited about these presentations. So thank you for the work that you do.
All right. Well, members, thank you. And I just would like to point out we have in the room here Kristen Johnson from the Minnesota Council of Teachers of Mathematics. There is a handout. If you want to get to that, we weren't able to have her come up, but she certainly is in the room. If anybody has any questions, we really appreciate our presenters. Very interesting subject. It's an area we need to tackle here in Minnesota as well. So, members, this concludes our today's agenda. The next meeting will be Wednesday, March 11th, 2026. And with that, the committee stands adjourned.